Welcome to PodNuts, Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 229, Hardware Tools. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. This is our live call-in show for Computer Repair Techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have Chris Carruthers from Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
I am hot, Jeff.
Nice.
It's hot up here.
Hot in Canada.
It is hot in Canada. We're like 66 degrees. I don't know what's going on, man.
And also joining us today, we have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
Loaded. Ready to launch.
All right. And we have joining us brand new Eric Metzner from Nowhere Computer Repair. He was on PodNuts Daily a few weeks ago and has come on this show to share his wealth of knowledge. Eric, how you doing?
Well, if that's if the wealth of knowledge is the case, it's going to be a very poor show.
Oh, he's doing great. He's too modest.
Come on, Eric. That was a good daily.
Thank you. I'm just being as sarcastic as ever, so that's the kind of day we're going to have.
Awesome. All right, John, why don't you go ahead, since you whine a lot about not being able to start off, share a tip or story that we can learn from this week.
Jeff, best week ever. Spring break here in Grand Rapids, so I had a quiet week. So I cleaned the office, although it doesn't look like it behind it. So I'm, what am I doing? I'm wiping. I had to wipe about 40 computers I had down in storage that I collected. So I'll take those to the refurber. And I guess my tip would be is I upgraded my Ultimate Boot Disk. Not the Windows version, just the DOS version, just to get the latest version of, I want to say Fabs Derix. I know I can download Derix separately, but sometimes I use the other tools as well. So the Ultimate Boot Disk is upgraded to 5.3.7. It's got the latest version of Derix on it, which I think is 3.2 or something like that. But yeah, that's what I've been doing to wipe. So it's been a quiet week, so it's been great.
Awesome.
Oh, and I did make a little donation, so I got to check to see if my fancy little name is on the donation page now. Ooh. But yeah, throw him a nickel if you use it. So
nice,
just a little shout out to him. That's a nice little tool.
Absolutely, yeah, it's been a standard for many years. All right, and let's see, Chris, why don't you go ahead and share a tip or story with us?
Sure. So I guess a lot of you have probably heard that I use our website as basically an online flyer, right? Like it's nothing fancy. It's not really supposed to bring in traffic, but if somebody's looking for me specifically, they can find what we're all about. And that wound up actually turning a couple of heads because, we've been sending out more and more of those technical newsletters lately. Wound up with somebody who called me this morning just out of the blue and said, "Hey, can you tell me a bit more that unlimited support plan for $60 a month you have on your website?" And most of the explanation was already done. So if you're offering something, put it on your site. Sometimes people are going to do the research themselves and they just want to clarify it with you.
Very good. Awesome. Glad that's working out for you. Awesome plan. All right. And Eric, what do you have to share with us this week?
Oh, geez. The best thing that comes to the top of my head is the return of Nightmare Software. Lately, I've been seeing a lot of clients running old machines. I think they're getting scared about the whole Vista going end of life thing. So I've been doing a lot of migration from Windows Live Mail to either Outlook or Thunderbird. And let me tell you, Windows Live Mail is just so much fun to work with. It's not a very nice piece of software at all. So that might be something that other folks can use as kind of a marketing thing is, put some posts out there, send out some newsletters saying, "Hey, if you're using Windows Live Mail," because Microsoft did drop support for that years ago, "we can help get you set up on Outlook or something different for the low price of whatever." Because people really need to get off that darn piece of software.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I just took a customer who, again, Windows Vista end of life was coming up. I let him know about it a few months ago and actually last year. And we talked about getting a new computer, getting everything set up. And he actually has to log into a couple websites to upload some photos for some of the work he does out of his home. And so I needed to make sure that everything was going to work. Back in the day, I could only upgrade Java to a certain, I think it was like Java 6 30 or something like that. And anyways, he couldn't have anything higher than that because it wouldn't work with this company system. So he got a brand new computer, really nice machine. I think it was like a Core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 2 terabyte spinning hard drive. And for what he needs it for, it's a 17 inch screen because he just sets it on his computer desk and it just sits there. But one of the things that I've done in the past, because AOL Mail has a hard time getting attachments from certain entities, I'll put it that way. And so I've had to set him up on Outlook 2007 on his old machine. Well, with this new machine, he got Office 365 for a year for free. So I set up Outlook, got AOL in there, and basically I told him, I'm not going to download your AOL software on your computer. I said, just trust me. Use Outlook for your email. I've got it set up so when you open it up, it's going to go right to your AOL email, even though he has an Outlook email for his Microsoft login and whatnot. And I said, just trust me. Let's deal with this for a couple months. I'm going to show you how to use it, and we're never going to go back to the AOL again unless you absolutely just can't stand it. But trust me, you won't need it. And so we were able to do that, and I'll be working with him over the next couple months, just making sure that he can have all the things that he needs to do. Basically, download emails. He has to be able to shrink photos and upload them to a website. That's it. Pretty easy peasy. It's just that sometimes when you're dealing with people that are doing this like sporadically, a lot of times they forget some of the steps to do things. So the other thing I was doing was I was creating some documents. Now, this is all paid for. I'm, you know, charged by the hour for stuff like this. But I was creating documents for it step by step with pictures so he could go through it and be able to do what he needs to do whenever he has anything to do on that computer, according to his work there. So, all right. And let me add one more thing. So this day, actually yesterday, marks my 3-year anniversary of podcasting. I was looking up the numbers and seeing when our first episode came out of Podnuts Daily. And thus far, over the last 3 years, I've done over 281 podcasts in 3 years. I've enjoyed every bit of it, and I've got to meet a lot of great people and work with people and hear other people's stories, which is awesome. Plus, I get to hang out here every week with these guys and gals that come on the show, and we basically get to talk shop and come up with some ideas, share some things for you, the audience, to listen to and hopefully gain some knowledge from. So that's why we're here.
Nice. Congratulations.
Congrats, Jeff. Congrats.
Definitely doesn't feel like it, though, does it?
No, it flew by so quick. When I looked it up, I said, 3 years, really? So it's been awesome. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come into the main topic. Our show today brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools that you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients. You can use it everywhere. Network visibility inside the RMM, see what's going on on that network. Easy to read dashboards, which I really appreciate. It's got to be easy to read. If I don't understand it, I won't look at it. Ninja is always adding new features like a powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. An executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added and removed, hardware changes, and team viewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer. Go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right. Our main topic today is, some of you may or may not know by the title, hardware tools. We're going to talk about some of our favorite hardware tools and what we would like in the future to help us be more efficient in our businesses. So, John, since you came up with this topic, since I was begging and pleading and asking for one, why don't you go ahead and kick it off and talk about some of the things hardware-wise that you use in your business all the time?
All right, I guess I'll start at the basics. I think I've talked about these before, but everybody loves their iFixit toolkit. So this will be my first piece of hardware that I use in computer repair. If you're just starting out, the iFixit toolkit's great, but I think it starts around $100, doesn't it, Jeff?
Actually, I think it's only like 68 or something, usually with some discounts and stuff you can get out there. So, yeah.
Well, if you're looking for an option where you'll get actually some more than that, and it's still pretty good quality, is there's a company called Tekton, T-E-K-T-O-N, and I'll have links for all this in the show notes, that makes a couple different little technician toolkits that have the Spooger and all this kind of stuff. So there's a 27-piece, a 45-piece, and a 135-piece toolkit that you can buy all of them on Amazon, and you can buy all three of those for less than the cost of one iFixit toolkit.
Okay, awesome.
So that's a great way to get started. The large one has magnetic ends. I mean, it's got everything you think you'd need. What I kind of like about that kit, the one negative I don't like about the iFixit and why I don't carry it is the only thing in my bag is the screwdriver is not big enough when I'm doing rack mounting on devices like switch, you know, doing anything like switches or anything in a rack. Large screws for that iFixit toolkit doesn't work out. So just an option for somebody looking for maybe some good tools at a good price to get started.
And I will tell you that my very first, since we're talking about those types of tools, my very first tool kit, so to speak, was a set of Felo screwdrivers, and it's F-E-L-O. I believe it's a German company, but they are still, even though I use the iFixit kit now, they were things I used all the time, every day, all week long. And they still work great today. I've gotten basically stripped out screws with those screwdrivers, and the ends are still phenomenal. And I think I might've spent $20 at a Micro Center for that kit. And then John, to your point too, I actually carry bigger screwdrivers for the mounting stuff because I don't like using a small screwdriver. So later on down the road, I had bought a couple of regular size number two, and I think a number one, basically a Felo screwdriver with a soft handle and everything. So again, those things have been rock solid for, well over seven years now. Chris, what do you got?
Sure. So I'm an iFixit person. So I do have the iFixit toolkit. I have bought all of my iMac Spludger cards from them. Gonna shoot a link up here. I pick up all my adhesives from them. The adhesives come with like a little, you know, the really big iMac screens that for some reason Apple decided to have those mounted on with double-sided tape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I always pick up the kits from them, and it's cool because it comes with a little pizza cutter roller to help you cut the tape on the inside. So that they have a lot of neat tools with stuff like that. I've got my iCan dual drive dock with a push button cloner. Of course, we all remember my Lenovo DVD drive and my IBM floppy drive that John was very excited about the last time I talked about it. But really, you know, what it comes down to is most of the time, if I'm picking up a tool, I'm picking up a tool because it's for a job. And then that tool is something that I continue to use. You know, I have a big box of Cat 5e Ethernet cabling and a punch down tool that I'll have to clean the box of all the dirt off of it before I take it to a client's place because it's been sitting there for so long. You know, it's not like I don't know how to use it, but if it looks that dusty, they might not think that I do. Tools I think for me are just going to continue to grow as I do jobs, but I do mostly software repair here.
Right. Yeah. And you made a great point though, that you bought the tools as you needed them. And a lot of times that job will actually pay for the tool and then you can use it on subsequent jobs after that. And you've got it forever, especially when you're buying quality stuff. And again, you're not really using the same tool a lot of times over and over again daily. So a lot of these tools will last for many, many years. And then when you need another one, you just replace it. And I think the other thing too, talking about the screens, and I'll throw this in here while we're talking about it, is the iFixit has those, basically those packs that you throw in a microwave and heat up and you lay it on the screen to heat the adhesive up. And then you take your plastic spudgers and you pry the screens away. And then you might stick another little plastic, what looks like a guitar clip or
Yeah.
You know, and so you take one of those and you shove it in there so it holds the screen up away from the adhesive, and you do that around the whole screen, and it makes it a lot easier to pull apart instead of sticking a screwdriver in there and cracking the screen and having to pull all the little glass pieces out.
And I will tell you, and admittedly, I cracked a screen on, that's why I had to replace the screen in the first place. So, you know, my $600 job turned into an $800 screen. But, you know, that roller that I was talking about, a lot better than using the heat displacement to try to deal with that. Like it just zipped right across and then put the splutcher in there and it came right off. It was perfect. But the other thing I wound up picking up, because I used my credit card, going back a little bit more, the IMAX where you have to slip a card through the slot in the back to push the screen forward to get it off the magnets. I've busted credit cards, health cards, you name it. I've broken a card on those screens. So I picked up the plastic iFixit cards. They actually have cards for it that don't bend nearly as much. Those have been pretty useful, I think.
Yeah, I usually use a dent puller. Just stick it to the middle of the screen. And or if you're somebody like Tom Lawrence, you'll take basically a bathroom plunger and just stick that on there and pop that baby right off.
Why not? You just label it and say technician use only and you're good.
Just make sure your technicians don't think that's the ones they use in the bathroom.
That's right. Yes. That's the first question I asked him after I seen that video.
I just use a little Windex. It'll be fine.
All right, Eric, what do you got?
I'm going to have to go with the fellas here and say a little nice little toolkit. But when I started out, you know, I started my business with just a couple of $1,000 5 years ago and grew it from there. So there was no way I was going to buy the iFixit kit at the time. So what I did was I picked up a little imitation Chinese Stanley screwdriver kit off of eBay for $15. I've still got this thing 5 years later. This little toolkit has made me tens of thousands of dollars over the years. And I'm loath to get rid of it. I have the iFixit kit, you know, and I supplement my little imitation Stanley kit with some of the bits out of that. But when I have to take something apart, I still go to my little yellow imitation Stanley kit because that little fellow's made me a lot of money. And best $15 I've ever spent.
It's funny how emotionally invested we get into our tools sometimes, right? Like, you know, this is John right here. I'm gonna take John out to the next job.
Well, the other thing too is it's all about how the screwdriver or whatever feels in your hand. There are some that I've like the first original iFixit kit. To me, I couldn't stand the screwdriver handle, so I actually don't even use that kit. It's in a drawer somewhere. When I bought their second kit with the magnetic box and everything, they'd improved the handle to where it was as close to the Philo screwdrivers I was used to using that I can use it now, no problem. I love it, but it's all about the feel to me.
That's why I don't use my iFixit kit, is that handle is just so bloody uncomfortable. And I wonder, maybe I should invest in the second edition and give that a shot.
I couldn't stand the first one, to be honest with you. So I barely used it unless I needed a special bit.
Yeah, it digs into the palm of your hand a little bit, yeah?
Exactly. And they made great improvements on the second one.
Is it weird, though, that the only reason why I bought the iFixit kit in the first place, because I had two or three screwdrivers that did most of it, and then I needed a pentalobe screwdriver. And that's what prompted that purchase.
Was that to take apart a McDonald's toy?
That was not. Do they use pentalobe screwdrivers?
I can't remember. Seriously? I think so. The triangle ones, right?
No. The pentalobe is the apple, like star, weird looking. Yeah.
Oh, I don't call it. Yeah. I don't call those pentalobes.
That's what it's called. Okay. I don't know what you. All right.
Yeah. I'm an old hardware mechanic. So yeah, we don't call those pentalobes, but maybe Apple came up with that term. We're going to call this a pentalobe. Yeah. It sounds really stupid.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, it is the same company that decided to call it motherboard, a logic board.
Well, that's true. Because there's something logical about that.
Well, it doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy like a mother, so.
All right, let's move back over to John. John, what else you got?
Let's see. I think Chris mentioned his hard drive. Did you mention your hard drive dock, Chris?
Yes.
So I haven't found one of these that I love yet, but I'm going to go through the couple that I've used that I've found adequate. So I've used the Anchor USB 3.0 and eSATA dock, which is a single slot dock. And the reason I like that is because the eSATA, so you can send ATA commands to the drive as needed. I also like to use eSATA whenever I do any data restore if I don't actually put the drive on the actual SATA bus inside the computer. which brings up my next little dock, which is the D-Shot aluminum alloy dock, which is an internal mount, which Jeff shared with me. So that actually mounts in to a 5 1/4 inch space inside of your desk, inside of your tower computer, and allows you to slide in a 2.5 inch and 3.5 inch drive at the exact same time onto the SATA bus and do all sorts of magical things with it. So that is very cool. And that was a very hot tip. Thank you, Jeff.
That has the power switch on it that you can, so you don't have to have it on when you boot up. You can shove the drives in there. You boot up your computer, let it go to the Windows operating system or whatever operating system, and then you can turn the drives on and to start copying that data or whatever you need to do. Because a lot of times people will probably remember when you take a bad hard drive and it's in a system, sometimes even if it's not the boot drive, it will cause a corruption in the boot up and you can't get in the operating system because it's trying to read this drive. And it's like, hey, we can't read it. So I don't know why we're not going to do anything with it. And we're just not going to boot. So you're going to get a black screen until you unhook that drive, get it back in the operating system. And that particular device was why I stopped using eSATA. Because back in the day when you would use eSATA, not every motherboard would actually allow you to have a mother or a disk plugged in before it would try to load that with the operating system. So you couldn't put something, you couldn't turn the operating system on or the computer on and then basically turn the disk on using eSATA. You had to use USB because that would actually recognize it. eSATA wouldn't. Now on all the modern computers, most of those do the automatic switching nowadays. So you can actually boot up with a drive you can turn the eSATA on afterwards and access that information. It's called hot swap. And I think HP came up with it a millennia ago, but basically that's what all modern machines do nowadays.
I was going to say, from my understanding, hot swap generally works best in a Linux environment as opposed to Windows. Windows kind of freaks out whenever you try to do any kind of hot swapping anyway. So it's, hot swap isn't really a feature when it comes to Windows. You're best off just kind of ignoring it, really.
Well, one of the things that I talked to when I had done a show with Scott Moulton from myharddrivedied.com, he basically had said that all machines are capable of this and have been forever. It's just not written into the firmware to be able to do it on all the older machines. He goes, but every one of them, and I've had no problems with hot swap in Windows from my standpoint, on my bench computer, on my personal computer, no issues whatsoever. So I've been able to get that to work and it's been great for me. But I used to use a lot of times I would boot up for Linux and then you could add a drive in afterwards and then you could get whatever data off because Windows back in the day just didn't want to do anything.
No, that's the D-Shot. That's really good. So that was a good tip, but I've used that a lot. I probably like that even better than most of the docks I've used. The other docks that I've used are the Dycon docks, D-Y-C-O-N-N. Had some good luck with those. I like the physical docks. I do not like the software that comes with the docks. So that's kind of why I've drifted away from those.
Do you have to use the software with them?
You do not. You do not.
Okay.
But they have some tools that really is probably what pushed me to the Dycon was some of the tools they had. Because they had some wiping tools and stuff like that, but they ended up being pretty poor.
Okay.
You know, and some cloning tools and everything like that. So I just went back to what I used before. I was hoping that it would be kind of an all-in-one solution that would be done, but I ended up not liking that. So everybody knows about the Link Sprinter, obviously, that our friend Mr. B, I don't know, has a personal relationship with. So obviously I have a Link Sprinter 300. There's the 100, 200, and 300 that you can get. I think I know somebody that's going to buy my 300 from me because I just ordered and should have in 7 to 10 days. The Pocket Ethernet. What did we decide this was called? Which I'm kind of excited to get.
Pocket Hernet.
Pocket Hernet. Putting it in the chat. So that's in there. Oh, speaking of B, he just came on. So anyways, you know, the Link Sprinter, I think no matter what you're doing, if you're dealing with any sort of networking, you at least need a basic network cable tester just so you can make sure you got your pins right if you have problems. But, you know, if you can spend a little bit more and get something like the Link Sprinter, I think it pays for itself in its first use when you find a problem.
But what's the differences between what you're going to like with the new one versus the Link Sprinter?
the two features that I like out of the box, or just from reading the specs, they essentially do the same thing. But the two things that I like is the PE has a rechargeable battery and uses Bluetooth versus replaceable batteries in the Link Sprinter, and it uses Wi-Fi to communicate to your smartphone.
Okay.
So now I'll let everybody know how things actually go when I get it. This could be a crash and burn, and I may not sell my Link Sprinter. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the Link Sprinter, just like I'm not saying anything there was wrong with the iFixit. It's just an option I'm going to go with.
Right. Cool. John is the tester. And then, Eric, what do you use any type of drive duplicators in your business?
I do. I'm a fan of the StarTech drive dock, actually. I've always had really good luck with that. And the Black X also. The one I avoid, though, and I was really disappointed in, a lot of people in some of the Facebook groups were talking about the Sabrent docks. Bought a couple of them on sale on Black Friday last year, actually. Both of them died within a week. Just absolutely just chunk waste of plastic, and it was horrible. So I'm going to stick with my Black X and my StarTech, but I love those. Those work pretty well.
It's funny. I've got one of each. Yeah, I've got the Black X, and that was from Thermaltake. And then with the StarTech ones, pretty much everything I've had with StarTech has been fine. Every piece of hardware has worked for years, really. I've never really had any problems.
I've had issue with their HDMI to whatever converters. A lot of them seem to burn out a lot faster than I would expect them to.
Hmm. And why are you converting from HDMI to what?
Because when you have a multi-million dollar company that wants to change one piece of equipment but not another throughout a plant, you just kind of make things work.
Gotcha. Or you just tell them it can't be done.
You know what? I have a comment for you after the show about that. You don't tell them you can't do it. You just tell them how much it's going to cost.
There you go. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it my way, and here's what it's going to cost you. And you're going to pay it because you're going to be better off in the future. Oh, all right. So, Eric, what else do you have?
I'm actually a really big fan of the little Kingston USB flash drives, actually, as far as hardware that I use a lot of. I've got a series of these. I connect them to those little tags that you put on a keychain, and they all connect up in a row along the back wall of my office. And I put things on there like recovery disks, different versions of Windows, Mac OS, Linux. Basically, I do any kind of software that I need, I put on these little flash drives. And the little Kingston, they're all metal, and I actually have one here. They stand up really well. They're not plasticky. They're not cheap construction. Here we go. This little piece of metal, little hole on it, little keychain thing fits right in there. You can knock it around, drop it, throw it across the room. It's not going to break. But I just like to keep my stuff organized. So I put, like, say I have a Windows 7 ISO on one, I have a Windows 8 ISO on another. I don't know why. And so on and so forth. And I just put those on those little keychains, hang them up, keep them organized. And I get that's probably another piece of equipment that I use on a daily basis.
Eric, that's a good tip. I like the keychain thing, and you're leading right into my next one, too. I got a couple USB sticks that I recommend. There's a small, really tiny one called the Cruiser Fit. It's an 8-gig stick, and it's really irritating because it slides into the USB port so close that you can barely get it out. But that's exactly why I love it, because what I use that for is I throw that into machines that don't have a TPM module on them when I have to do BitLocker. And I'll put a link in there, too, because there's a way to do BitLocker without a TPM or a trusted platform module. So I use that little USB stick as kind of a quasi-TPM. Probably my favorites. Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Yeah. So the ones I ended up buying, the USB drives, are basically silicon power. And same thing. They're nice little metal construction with a nice hole in it. And it, like you, Eric, that's what I like, because I keep it on a keychain that hangs on a shelf. And it's got all my, you know, different drivers, easy to boot, all my ISOs. These are only some of them. I've actually got three keychains full of these things. So I love that ability. I know a lot of people have talked about using one USB stick and being like using an easy to boot. And to be honest with you, I've never been able to get it to work 100% of the time. So I spend more time troubleshooting that than just having each ISO on a separate USB thumb drive. and I can plug it in and go.
Is you have a single point of failure. You have all your eggs in a single basket, and if something goes wrong and you're on the job, you're SOL. But when you keep things separate like that, if something goes wrong with my Windows 7, say ISO, well, I can make another one or I can do something else. But if you have like on the easy to boot or con boot or whatever on a single stick, you can't access one ISO. Odds are you're not going to be able to access any of the others. And then you're going to have to recompile the whole bloody thing. And it just becomes a mess. And I get paid to do things for other people. I don't get paid to do stuff like that for myself. So,
right.
Yeah. Amen. So you guys in your keychain, that's a good idea. I went a different way. I bought this little case that holds my.
Oh, nice.
You know, the USB stick. So I kind of like your keychain idea. The other USB stick I really like, and you might even turn me this one on too, Jeff. I don't know. Or did I turn this on to you? Is the Kangaroos that are lockable?
You might have. Yes, I've got one Kangaroo that's a 64 gig that is lockable with a mechanical switch, which I love. And still, when I'm using it, when I'm on an infected system, I plug that sucker in because, yeah, maybe there is not a virus that's going to attack my USB drive, but maybe there is.
Well, this way I can go around the block and stick this in everywhere and feel pretty good about it. So, and I like both. I like that Silicon Power. That's the, I don't know, what would I call the brand I buy? I buy 10 packs of those. Those are kind of my throwaways, you know, that, and they're solid.
If you buy them in the 10 packs, I do the same thing, and they are relatively cheap. They're actually cheaper than buying some of the other ones individually. So you right. can get good deals on Amazon, and I can't remember what I paid for them last time, but they were less than some of the higher end. I've got 32 gig and 8 gig drives.
I'll have some links for that for you in the show notes.
All right, Chris, what else you got?
Well, I have some of the iGo Universal laptop power cords.
Ah, yes.
I don't like taking power cords from customers at all. I do have that little checklist of here's all the things that you gave me, but that doesn't stop somebody from saying that I lost their power cord. So I do those. I mean, that, you know, unless you're going to start getting into like the I have a shelving unit with a bunch of little plastic drawers in it for screws so that I can keep all the screws separated when I'm working on a laptop. You know, just little things that I never really thought about until I ran into a problem.
Right. And going back to the iGo, the universal laptop power cords.
Yeah.
I've got the. I can't remember what it's called. It's an old one. I've had it forever. It's got a power saving mode on it. So basically when you plug it in, you got to push a button on the top and it turns green and runs. Yes.
Oh, not that you can see it now. Yes. There we go.
That's the exact one I have. Now, I will tell you the one reason I do take laptop power supplies from my customers, if they bring them, especially when they're Dells, and John knows this, a lot of times that will not give me the proper power, and Dell will sit there and whine and complain about it and let me know that it's not getting the full amount of power that it would be getting from an OEM Dell laptop charger.
Oh, that BIOS pop-up about how you're not using a proper Dell power supply? Yeah.
So, and I've actually had some where, not a whole lot, but very rarely I will have one that I cannot power with that. So, my rule of thumb is if they bring the laptop charger, I just take it, I label it, send it back to them. And I've never really had any issues with that. But yeah, I can understand if I could, and I really probably need to get an updated iGo power or laptop, you know, charger, just because I think some of the newer ones may work a little bit better with some of the equipment out there.
Tell you what, you go ahead and test that. Because it'll be half the price for you to do it. And if it works well for you, I'll give you one too.
My favorite one is, can you tell me what this is?
No. I can't see it.
That is my universal. That is my universal. It's called a Finzik. And as long as your laptop runs off 65 watts, that is the universal power adapter.
Nice. So what John is showing for those that are listening, it basically looks like an elongated plug with a tip on the end there, right?
It's probably 1 inch thick and what is that, 3 inches long?
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll put a link in the show notes here in a second. It'll be in the show notes, but I'll put it in the chat because it is available on Amazon. It is $100.
Well,
so I don't know if that's pricey compared to what you're paying. But, you know, it does come with a bag of, I don't know how many different tips, but it's got the Lenovo tip, the Dell tip, the HP tips, all that kind of stuff. So as long as you're 65 watt or less, I mean, there are some Dells that you got to have the 90 watt. And that's what you guys are complaining about.
I was going to say the Eagle Green does go up to 90 watts. It's not so much that it doesn't get the amount of power that you want. It's just that the whatever is in the BIOS detecting the power coming from the cord just knows. It's annoying.
There's a sensor in there that tells it that this is not an OEM Dell power cord.
Yeah.
That's cool, John. I did not really. I'm going to check that out definitely. So I'll be excited to look at the show notes after we get those up. So Eric, how about you? What do you use for connecting those laptops up?
I generally use the NIGO as well. I've got a couple of other that I use. One of the problems that I've been seeing lately, though, especially with HP and Dell, is they've both issued a new tip size in some of the newer laptops that these kits don't have. And I've been seeing that over the years as things change. So I do take power cords for my clients when they bring their laptops in, but I do have the universal power adapters for when they don't, or even for when the ones they bring me don't work. But until these kits or until the standardization occurs across the board, I'm always going to take the chargers from the customer. Of course, I document everything and I make the client sign something on drop off, something on pickup, and I basically do a bunch of CYA measures. So far, knock on wood, I haven't had any issues with any clients accusing me of losing something of theirs. But the power cords from the client basically boils down to it's better to have it, not need it, than to need it, not have it.
And Chris, on the iGo, have you been able to find, because I did look for some extra tips like Eric's talking about for some of these newer versions, and I couldn't find any tips that you could just buy by themselves.
No, and I think that would be a great idea for these companies to do is as new connectors come out, it would be nice to be able to just buy the tips to go with it. I mean, that said, you know, I have Mac chargers and Lenovo chargers and, you know, the really individually specific type of chargers I just have here for that reason that I'm never going to find a universal charger that's going to have those.
That's the cool thing about the Finzik. They have this, I don't know what they call it. I think it's called the tip guarantee, that if one of the tips they send, if they don't have the right one, they will send you a free one.
Oh, what?
And I've used that once.
I'm going to have to check that out then when we see the show notes. Yep.
I mean, it comes with like 11 or 12 tips, but I've used it once where I called them and I said, I think it was for, I don't know what it was for. I can't remember, but yeah, that was great. I mean, it doesn't help you in the immediate need if you're, you know, you're working on a machine, you're trying to turn fast, but at least you'll have it next time.
Yeah. Now I'm looking at the screenshot here of all the different tips that they have. And I'm noticing dead center in that 9 tip arrangement they have there. That is the Lenovo connector, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
Yeah.
I just used that one last week.
I think I'm going to have to invest myself into some Finzik.
All right, John, what else do you got?
Well, there's some easy ones that are pretty easy. Everybody needs a power supply tester. You know, choose your favorite. I'm going to put a Thermaltake one in the show notes. Something I don't use very often, but maybe you guys that do a lot more laptop repair than I do, and help me if I'm saying this wrong, but it's spelled S-U-G-R-U, Sugru, moldable glue. Have you guys ever used that?
No.
I've never used it, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. Eric?
I've never used it.
It is amazing. I mean, I'm not the guy that does the laptop repair like you guys, but I've used it to, somebody's dropped their laptop and I've pulled out the components and you can buy it, kind of build up the corner of a laptop. I mean, it's, the color doesn't match or something like that, but it is just amazing what that stuff does. And it's cheap. I'll put a link in the chat right now, but.
Very cool. Yeah, I need to try that because a lot of times I turn those jobs away anymore with the plastic cases and whatnot. I just go, hey, listen, we could replace this whole bottom or this whole upper, but it's going to be $100 for the part if I can find it. And I'm going to charge you an arm and a leg just to do the replacement. So because it's a big job. And so a lot of times I'm like, you know, to be honest with you, this machine is 4 years old. Go replace it. Oh.
Well, the cool thing is you can use it for a bunch of stuff. Like, you know, you something's frayed, you can kind of use it to hold it together. It's pretty moldable and pliable. You know, when you're initially working with it, it's extremely easy to work with versus a liquid glue.
Yes.
You know, it's just, you know, I don't have the skills to use it to its potential, but I mean, it's just pretty neat.
That is cool. Yeah, I'm going to get some of that. Definitely.
I think that the only problem, though, is that Jeff and I are going to wind up getting these things stuck to our fingers, and then we're not going to know what to do.
Chinese handcuffs or whatever those
things. the finger traps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, Eric, what else do you got?
Oh, goodness. As far as hardware tools go, I would say having a good set of cables, anything from monitor cables to USB cables, having some Thunderbolt cables lying about. Because those, you never know when you're going to need them. Like, I've been doing more and more Mac work lately. And years ago, I bought a StarTech Thunderbolt cable and used it once, put it back in its plastic, shoved it in a drawer. Well, I've had to use it twice in the past 2 weeks just to get data off of Macs that wouldn't boot. Pop them up into target disk mode, pop those Thunderbolt cables in, hook them up to my shop Mac, and pull data like a champion. I was glad I had it, that I didn't have to order that cable again. And, you know, so that thing that's been sitting in my drawer for over a year has actually finally paid for itself and made me some money. So having just cables is always a good thing.
That's good. I wouldn't have thought of, and I probably need to do it. I don't have a Thunderbolt cable, and same thing. I was thinking I'm never really going to have a need for it, but you do every once in a while, this stuff does pop up because I carry all the rest of the cables. You've got DVI, HDMI, your Cat5e cables, your USB cables of all different types, you know, the B, A, and whatever, the micro A or whatever they call it. So having all those different types in case you run into it where you go, well, maybe it's a cable, and it's an easy swap to figure out if they just have a cable problem or if it's a hardware problem with their equipment.
Yeah,
definitely.
One thing, actually, speaking of cables, I hadn't thought of this because I haven't actually done it in a while, but I picked up big rolls of Velcro, just small strip Velcro, because I can't tell you how many times I've seen customers who have just cut the cables because they use zip ties and they needed to move their cables around. So I've been replacing zip ties with the Velcro to prevent that.
And I'll tell you what, you can get these packages of Velcro with 100 of them wrapped in on themselves, so you can pull them off one at a time. And it's on Amazon, it's an add-on item. So whenever you're ordering something from Amazon, I'll just throw that in there. You can get a couple, they're cheap, like $2-3, maybe $5. But they are super cheap as far as Velcro goes, and I use them on everything. If you have a customer that brings you a laptop charger cable, and they don't have anything to wrap it up, they don't have any Velcro on it for whatever reason, I'll add one of these things on, and they're nice because they have a hole on one side. You can loop it around the cable, put it in there so it doesn't drop off, and then you can wrap their cord up nicely, and when you give it back to them, hey, that's a little extra added, and it cost you a few pennies.
So
it's funny, we're talking about that one right here, actually, that I've been playing with while we're talking. Yeah, you can get them in a roll, and I do the same thing as Jeff. Whenever a client brings me the power chargers, I always, and they don't have anything on it, instead of using a rubber band or tying it in a knot, I use one of these little Velcro wraps. It looks good. It looks professional. The client likes it. It's reusable. But they're also great in network cabling situations to use as opposed to zip ties. It looks more professional. It looks more, the aesthetic is better, but you, like Chris mentioned, you rule out the customer just cutting the darn cable instead of the frickin' zip tie.
Yeah. And I would prefer to get a roll rather than get, individual zip ties. Like I've got a couple of links here for a 5 yard and a 15 yard. You know, you just get a big roll of Velcro and just cut to size as you need. You might have one or two cables that you need to Velcro together, or you might have a bundle of 20 of them that are coming out of a big rack that you want to just bundle together. Right. So, you know, just depending on what you need, I find that being able to cut to suit is better.
I just add two or three together and it does the same thing.
Oh, you know, whatever. MacGyver.
Nobody notices. It just wraps around itself. It's all good. But whatever, Chris. I mean, you can have it your way.
You know what? My way's cheaper.
It probably is. All right, John, what else you got?
Let's see. Well, how about some convenience items? If you guys are in the Google ecosphere and you use Casting a lot, I have a bunch of these in my house, which kind of makes it just like a Sonos, and it is called a Grace Digital CastDock X2. I know, that's great, right?
Wow.
What it is, and I'll put it in the chat room right now, is it is a very nice speaker that your Chromecast, the little circle, fits right into the top of. You close it, and now you have a speaker with your Chromecast all in one. It's a nice package device, looks pretty. And then all, now with Chromecast, you know, you can set up your whole home so the same stuff's coming out of all your speakers. So now when the wife's gone, I can crank up Podnuts and it's playing through my whole house. So if I have to go anywhere, like get a drink, I can listen.
You don't miss a beat, right?
That's right. That's right. So that's a tech item, in my opinion, because if you're working on the bench, it, you know, passes the time.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, listen to podcasts.
The other thing that I use, that's right. The other thing that I use in my car all the time are Soshi magnetic mounts. And I use these everywhere. I don't know if you can see on the back of my phone, but I have a metal plate.
Oh, yeah.
And they are awesome.
And there are all, and there are all sorts of these things. I'll put one link, an Amazon link in the chat room. But you can get all sorts of these mounts. Like I have one that's just a magnet mount that goes right on the vent of my Jeep console. And the cool thing about it, if I spin the vent, you can't even see it. It's kind of, I don't know, ultra convenient for my car, but there's another one that fits right into the cigarette lighter. I mean, there's a bunch of them, but it's just ultra convenient because the magnet's really strong, but not too strong. You don't have to clip anything. You get in the car, you just toss it on there. And they have a, they have desktop mounts. They have all sorts of mounts. They have mounts for like in the kitchen, if you had a tablet that you wanted to put up there, if you're into cooking or something like that. So those are very handy.
Now, my favorite one of those is actually the cigarette lighter or 12 volt nowadays. Who has cigarette lighters, right? But the 12 volt power control that you plug that into, and it will actually give power through there. And then you can plug your phone in after you just kind of pop it on that, that magnetic strip. It's awesome. And it's so, I've seen John do it, and it's so awesome and easy to do. He pops it on there. He can orient it whatever way he wants. He can pull it off. There's no clipping. There's no moving little plastic things to hold it better. Having it slip out, it just attaches until he pulls it off physically.
Yeah, like you said, I've probably tried 20 different mounts in my car just to get something that I really like. And, you know, this is the first one that I've stuck with for this long. Maybe the only other one, which might be a little bit more custom, if you've ever heard of a company called ProClips USA, they do a very nice job and they do custom clips and custom mounting. But you, to get the whole setup, you might pay close to $50 to $100 to get their whole system for your particular phone. So it's not universal. So if you get a different phone, it may not work for you. But, you know, this is universal. You just buy any of the pieces. It's all universal, all interchangeable. So that is a highly recommended from me if you're looking for something to mount your phone or tablet anywhere for that matter. I don't think I've talked about this before. I don't know if you can see this, but this is, looks like a little USB stick. But this is my Laptone USB stick. This is a wireless card. The reason that this thing is so special, in my opinion, is I can plug this in all the way from Windows XP to Windows 10, and I don't have to load any drivers. This is automatically recognized. So it just saves when you load a fresh OS on... what are you going to show me? Load a fresh OS on a computer, don't have a network card, you just want to jump on the net, you plug this in, get you going.
No, I was just going to say, so I buy these off of eBay. There's a lot of different options out there for things to use. And I know one of the other things, speaking of, John has pointed me to this before, is the same type of thing where you plug it in USB and it, you can plug an Ethernet cable in to get in its, you remember which one it is, John? We've talked about it. You can.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll see if I can find that.
The J something. Anyways, this particular one, you can basically plug it in and there's no drivers needed. You can plug an Ethernet cable in and you've got that direct signal to a laptop or whatever device. If the Wi-Fi card is flaky or it doesn't have an Ethernet port, this is great for tablets and other things. So, yeah. Anyways, I like that. John will find that. We'll put that in the show notes anyways.
So I just, like I said, I keep buying things as they come up. So I've got a little, well, you probably can't see it. So it's an SD card to micro SD card adapter. That's come in handy a few times when I've had people complaining that, oh, you know, I don't think that my micro SD card is working. Well, no, it's working fine. It's your reader. This is a small portable USB, IDE and HDMI. Jeez, you know what? I'm done. Hard drive connector. We're just going to just stick with SATA. And
is that
your,
is that the ID that for the 3.5 drives and the 2.5 drives?
Oh yeah, man. Okay. So you've got, yeah. ID or SATA to USB 2.0 adapter.
Okay.
Look at how fancy this is. So, you know, I can just carry that around with me. I always keep a VGA to DVI connector because these still wind up coming in handy quite often. So I always have one of these still in the plastic kicking around somewhere. Take one with me in the car if I'm going anywhere. I've been getting into the habit because I do some cell phone. I picked up a bunch of those Liberation kits when the iPhone 5 came out. They came with screwdrivers and replacement screws for iPhones. Like I said, I just amass this stuff as I go, and it just keeps coming. So as the show goes on, I'll just keep pulling things off shelves every time you ask me, and it'll just be another thing.
All right, Eric, how about you?
Well, I'm going to kind of take this in a different direction where we'll be talking about all this hardware and this little hardware. We got to have somewhere to put it all, especially if we're going on site. So one of the pieces of hardware that I guess that I can't absolutely live without is a good laptop bag or tool bag. And a couple of years ago, I bought, it's called the Bag of Holding. I got it from ThinkGeek.com. It's a laptop bag. It's got a ton of pockets. It's an amazing bag. It can carry my laptop, all the tools I'd need onto a job site, and then have plenty of room for just more junk, pens, business cards, pretty much anything. And I love this little bag. It's really super durable, and it's a bag of holding, man. How cool is that?
It's only cool for about the 30% of us that know what a bag of holding is originally.
I think more computer geeks than you know of would know what that means.
Let's take a poll in the chat right now. Who knows what we're talking about?
So
I got my 12-sided dice ready.
Nice.
There you all go.
Right, keep going. I'll take a tally.
I'll tell you, along those lines, one of the things that I bought a long time ago when I first started my business, I actually went to Home Depot, and I've got a hard silver case. That's, you can put different compartments and slots in there and make them whatever size you want. And I keep all my cables and, you know, some of my screwdrivers and all these different parts and pieces and extra screws and all that kind of stuff. So I would always carry this on site with me when I go on site. And my kids would always laugh. They go, "Oh, you're pulling out the assassin case again, huh?" That's it. Yeah, I'm pulling out the assassin case. Just because it was a hard case, it looked like it had, I don't know, guns and groats and stuff like that in there. So
all you need to do is connect it to your wrist with a handcuff and you're good to go.
There you go. So yeah, definitely. I like Eric's idea with putting everything all in one spot, because I do know that when I went on site the other day, I've got my folder with all my paperwork and pens and business cards and USB sticks and all that kind of stuff in there. And then I've got this hard case that I carry. And then if I'm carrying any equipment or whatever, so it'd be nice to have, in a laptop bag with the laptop in it, all that. So it'd be nice to have everything in one spot. I definitely like that. John, what do you use? I know what you use, but why don't you tell the audience what you use?
Computing. I use a Briggs & Riley, which I used to travel a lot right out of college. So if you know what Briggs & Riley is, they're a huge luggage manufacturer. So I've always liked them because they've taken me probably 100,000 miles all over the planet. So that's what I use. And I like it for the same reasons the bag of holding is, because I can get everything in it. And I really like the laptop pouch, because if you look at a lot of the backpacks, when you slide your laptop in, if you put your hand all the way to the bottom, there's usually no padding on the bottom, or there's a space where your laptop will kind of go. I don't know why Briggs is the only one that's kind of figured that out, but they do a good job. You know, I've never had a problem. So yeah, all my go bags are in the Jeep, Jeff.
Yes.
So, you know that.
So yeah, he keeps a bunch of different bags for different things, but yeah, he's whenever John travels, he is always prepared. Well, except for that one time he went and was going to replace a switch or something and had an empty box in his Jeep. But other than that, John is always prepared.
You know, if we're going to keep on talking about the like four mistakes that John's made this week, then we're really going to wind up.
Oh.
Four.
Oh, that's funny.
Damn it.
All right. So
here, I got a boring one, but one that I thought was pretty handy that I've had forever. I think everybody probably carries one or has one, you know, just a optical drive.
Yep.
But what I really like about this one is the cable management. I don't know if you can see this, This is by Buffalo, and I'll put a link in there. But, you know, none of my cables are hanging off.
Nice.
And there's two cables here, and they all store within the device.
Oh, that's nice.
You don't have anything hanging out. Oh, and since you have two, you don't need any power connection either. So, you know, because you can do two, so you don't need it. So it'll self-power itself as well. So that's the reason I like that. Just one less thing, one less power adapter to carry.
Yep.
And that's by Buffalo.
Okay. All right, who's next? Can't remember where we left off. Eric?
It's Jeff's turn.
I've got nothing. I'm just following off you guys.
Why don't we roll that 12-sided dice and figure it out?
There you go.
Let's see who's going
next. Something else I use on the bench. I use a Western Digital. Mine is very old. It used to be called the MyBook. Well, it's called the MyBook Duo Desktop RAID External Hard Drive. Now, kind of looks like a NAS device, but it's actually just two hard drives and an enclosure, USB 3. But what I do is it has two terabyte drives in it, but that's where I store all my images. So, you know, off of that, I have a USB 3 cable. So if I'm going to image a PC, or it actually has all my Dell images for all my Dell Optiplex models, so that if I get something in here that's going to a known customer, I can just prep it. And 15 minutes later, my machine is done, latest version of whatever I need. And again, to Eric's comment, it's a RAID device because obviously one of those drives is going to fail sooner or later. So,
right. Now, is it a mirror type RAID where it puts it on both?
RAID 1. Yep.
RAID 1. Okay. Very good. Very good. And as far as now, I've got a bench computer, and I've built several over the years and kind of acquired some as I was first starting out. You can take an old computer and use it for a bench computer. What you'll find eventually, though, is that it will be a lot slower than what you're going to want. So a lot of times you can take a newer device and kind of beef it up a little bit, put some extra RAM and stuff in it, put a 2 terabyte or 4 terabyte hard drive or something to store data that you're copying for your customers as you're moving stuff back and forth. And it is nice to have a little bit newer device to be able to do that stuff. Or a lot of times you're waiting a long time, especially when you're copying things and writing things back to some sort of external drive so you can move it to another device or whatever. So that's what, definitely have a good bench machine. And just like these guys have been saying, work on it over time. You don't need one right now, especially if you're just starting out. You can use a used one that you've been using for years for something else. Eric, what about you? What do you use for a bench?
Actually, for a bench machine, and by bench machine, if you mean, you know, what I connect hard drives to when I do data recovery and stuff of that nature, I'm actually really fond of the old Windows Vista era compact Presarios. And the reason being is because the motherboard has both the SATA and the IDE connectors on them. And so I put those in a open air bench case, and I just plug hard drives into them as I need the recovered data. I boot into Parted Magic, which is basically a portable Linux distribution. I pull the data off that way. And I love these because having that IDE connection, when I have clients bring me their old Windows XP and this happens, but 98 and 95 machines, I can actually plug these hard drives in and get the data off with no problem. I've actually got two or three of these motherboards stashed in the closet for when the one on my bench machine finally dies, because IDE connection is unfortunately still around, and there are people that are still using it to run their businesses. And having a way to recover data for when these machines inevitably fail is definitely going to be priceless.
Eric, you are, that is smart. Because on my list, I have I don't run into much IDE anymore, but I use a StarTech device that takes the IDE and converts it to SATA. And then this device will allow me to slide it into a dock. But yeah, having the ports on the board would be sweet.
Yeah, and it's just on that one bench machine. I've tried those adapters in the past, and I've had them work most of the time. But there has been some failure, especially on the type of adapters that have, like Chris showed us, where you have the part that plugs right into the drive, and then you have the power bit that plugs into the power, the Molex power on the hard drive. I've had those actually short out and fry the hard drive in the past, and that had to go off to data recovery. And
oh, don't say that
in my pocket. So that's why I use these old Presario boards, is to not go through that again.
No, I agree with you there. I just have not seen an IDE drive in a while, but every once in a while, when somebody does bring me one, I still have one of those USB adapters, and it's an old one, but it hasn't failed me yet. But I can definitely understand there are some times when it's better to be directly connected to the motherboard.
Here's a way to kind of prevent that. And this is what I wish I would have done all those years ago when I learned the lesson the hard way, is instead of plugging that into that little AC adapter, plug it into a regular power supply.
And there you go.
Go that way. That would probably be a lot safer. And don't do what I did, because that was very dumb and very expensive.
Yep. Sounds good. That's a good tip there.
Well, and really at this point in our technological careers, the only time you really should be connecting anything IDE is to save the data to move it onto a SATA drive that you're putting on your computer. You know, I'd hate to think that any of us are still repairing computers that use IDE on a regular basis.
Oh, goodness, no. Well, I only see them to upgrade them or to recover data.
That's right.
You would hope. But I know there are some facilities that they're using their older equipment, basically runs off these old machines. And
oh, God, I wrote a blog post about that not too long ago on my company's blog about a asphalt company that's using Windows 95 to run a DOS program that controls their entire mixture, and still works for them. So whatever.
Yep. It still works. And a lot of times the problem is to have somebody rewrite that program, which was probably written for that industry. It costs so much money that they're like,
it's cheaper to buy 10,000 spares than to.
Yeah. Buy them in lots of. Yeah. There you go. 10,000. Like, those sitting around won't go bad.
Try telling that to the bureaucrat just counting the numbers in the office, right?
All right. So, John, you got anything else?
No, that's probably pretty much it.
Okay. Eric?
The last thing I can think of on the line of convenience items is a lot of us work alone for the most part, and we've got to do something to pass the time and to keep us somewhat sane. So I would say a decent pair of speakers. I like this Logitech THX set of speakers with a little subwoofer. I have a set here at home in my office, and I have a set at the shop in the office. And sometimes, when I don't have any too much going on, I'm just doing paperwork, I turn on Pandora, crank it up.
That's not true. You're listening to our show when you have spare time.
Well, okay, when I'm not listening to the show and using that to
there you go.
Chatting with the folks in Zoom a little bit too colorfully, but a good pair of speakers is something that we should all have too. I mean, it helps keep the sanity level at a happy medium, because I'd be loath to say we're all completely sane.
You know what's funny though is one of the things that I actually do is I have Pocket Casts on my phone. I have Pocket Casts in the browser, because I bought both of them. They sync flawlessly. They work just fine. And so I can play it through my computer speakers while I'm working on stuff here in the office. But what I've been doing a lot lately is I've just been cranking my phone up, throwing it on the desk, and letting it play whatever with the speaker face down, so that rebounds off the wooden desk. And basically I can listen to all my stuff there. So I'm just listening to podcasts, and if I need to pick it up and go, I'll throw it in my pocket while I go down to get some water or something like that. So I never have to leave it or, shut anything off. So it just becomes more convenient for me to have it on that little portable computer device called a phone. Chris, what were you looking at?
Well, I pulled out my emergency dice bag, because in my emergency dice bag is my fidget machine. So if you want to talk about something, if you need to do something while you're getting frustrated and you don't want to use a stress ball, this keeps me busy. It's got toggles, switches, spinners, buttons. It's a machine just to fidget. And that's it.
So here's my advice for that. If you get to the point where you need a stress ball or a fidget machine, what you need to do is stop and go do something fun, people. Just stop. Because it's gotten to the point where that's just ridiculous. You know what? If the customer's got to wait for that computer, it doesn't matter. They'll wait.
Listen, no, but that's not necessarily going to be true when it is March 25th and the accountant has until the 1st of April to submit the taxes for whatever customer they're working on, and their QuickBooks server goes down. If I'm sitting there waiting for the QuickBooks server to come on, that's me.
So in the U.S., I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the U.S., there's this little piece of paper that's really easy for an accountant to file, and it's called an extension. And it happens all the time for businesses, almost every year for most businesses.
So here's the problem with that. Is in order to, you don't get an extension here. What you have to do is after you get the fines, you then have to appeal the fines, which now is billable time for the accountant. Plus, you're not guaranteed to get it.
So in the U.S., not in Canada, but in the U.S., if you have to fidget or use a stress ball, just stop and move on. All right. So is there, I think we've covered pretty much everything that we can cover as far as hardware and things that we use. And if anybody has any questions or wants to add to the show, they can definitely do that. But let's take another quick break and then we will get into the, we've got a few more minutes left for some emails and some calls. So I want to let you guys know that basically our Amazon affiliate link for podnuts.com, which is the network that this show is on, along with many other great shows. And it got shut down. We don't know exactly why, but Amazon's got their rules. And apparently either somebody had said something nefarious was going on, which it wasn't, but they're no longer honoring that original agreement. And like every other big company out there, they can basically say, we can stop giving you this revenue, this affiliate revenue, for no reason at all. And that's basically what the letter said, with some other things of maybe this was happening or whatever. So anyways, the Amazon affiliate link, you can appeal it, but we were looking at it in trying to figure out, is it going to be worth doing that? Even though it was a good revenue source for the network to bring in money for replacing items that people need, mixers, mics, all that kind of stuff. And plus paying the costs that it costs to run the Podnuts network. Again, it's like anything else. Public radio, you've got, you know, your public TV stations and all that kind of stuff. It still takes money to run these things. And usually it's ran by donations from the audience, the people that are enjoying the content that has been given to them on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis, whatever it might be. So what we're going to do, and by the time this podcast actually comes out in audio form, we are going to have a donation button on the Podnuts webpage, right on the front webpage. And what we're going to suggest to every listener out there is that you would give $1 a month. That would be a total of $12 a year. And what that would do is that would give us enough revenue to bring it into the network to be able to do some of the things that we would like to do as far as improving the network, doing the things we have to do with the website, paying all this hosting costs and all these types of things. Again, the stuff we're able to do nowadays is cheap, but not free. So there is a cost and somebody has to pay the cost. And so we're asking the audience to come together and basically, if you can find it in yourself to give $1 a month, you can do it right through your PayPal account. Most people have PayPal accounts. It's easy to do. You don't have to attach it to anything other than that. PayPal, as we all know, is very, very safe. I've been using it for years for buying things off of eBay. And anytime there's ever been a discrepancy, we've been able to take care of it. So I just want to put that out there. And we're going to have some more information coming down the road. But if we can get, and we have literally thousands of people that listen to these shows on a regular basis. And so if we could just have those, pretty much everybody could come together, and if you can afford it, $1 a month, you know, skip that half a Pepsi, half a Mountain Dew, whatever it might be, half a Coke. I don't want to leave anybody out. Half a Mr. Pibb. I don't know. Anyways, I would take that opportunity to, if this is something that is impacting your life and is helping you, entertaining you, letting you learn some new things, letting you be a part of a community, which is awesome, which is why we do a lot of this stuff. If it's affecting you in a positive way, I would encourage everyone to give $1 a month. And like I said, we're going to have a button up there. It's going to be really easy. So go ahead and do that. There is another button on there right now. So there's going to be a small time where we're going to have this change because the other button for the month was a $10 a month. But what I am proposing is just everybody give $1 a month, $12 a year. It's easy. It helps out the network and it continues to bring these great shows and help us to not only keep them, but improve them over time, which is what we want to do. We always want to have the best content, audio, visual, everything that we can do possibly, so you guys can be entertained and learn from what we do, which is really cool. So I put that plea out there, and I hope that I will get the vast majority to step up. Just like anything else, we don't want to do, you know, a couple times a year or a couple times a year. We don't want to have this a marathon or anything like that and do a drive. And we're just going to ask continually that people give $1 a month. And if this is impacting you in a positive way, I would encourage you to do that. And if it's if these shows are not impacting you in a positive way, then I have no idea why you listen, to be perfectly blunt and honest. But anyways, I put that out there, and hopefully you guys will step up to the plate and help us out with this endeavor, because it will be, if we get a good amount of people to be able to do this, we'll have a good enough revenue to keep things going strong and do the things that we need to do as improvements and things come down the road.
Can I say one thing to that?
Go ahead.
So there are two buttons on the website right now. One of them does say a monthly donation. The one that just says donate now for the one-time donation, you can set your own donation amount on there. There is a checkbox that you can check to make it a monthly donation, so it will automatically do that amount for a monthly donation. So I actually have that set up. Right, I'm doing it right now and hitting the button right now. There's $1 a month.
Okay.
So anybody that's listening to that, if you want to do that, don't click on the monthly donation button unless you want to do $10 a month.
Okay.
If you want to set your own, hit the regular donate button. Just check the box right next to the amount and it'll do it monthly.
Thank you, Chris, because earlier I had looked at those buttons and I did not click on the other one. So thank you for that information, because I didn't realize that was there. And what we want to do is we want to make it as easy as possible for people. So we understand that every time that you make a click or have to push a button, it's like lifting 1,000-pound weight. It's human psychology is just the way it works. So we're going to try to make it as easy as possible. And we're going to have something up there that will have something special on there. But anyways, it will be in the support of the network. Now, also with that being said, we still have the separate shows have their Patreon pages that are helping the hosts of the shows to do some of the things internally that they pay for and do. So that's a whole separate thing. But we want to, number one, and this has always been my goal, is number one, I want to support this network, because I think we can do a great many things and keep this flowing, keep this information flowing. A lot of us love to share and do what we do, and we share it for free. So if people knew the amount of time that I spent, and I could actually spend more time if I had more time, but if people knew the amount of time that I spent, they would. There are some weeks where it's a 40 hour, or I'm sorry, some months where it's a 40 hour work week within that month. And minimum, it's 20 hours a week or 20 hours in a month's time period that I'm spending to put these shows together and do those types of things. So, but just want to let you know that. So there are going to be different avenues. And also, Door-to-Door Geek, Steve McLaughlin, is going to have he's started a separate show where he's going to talk about some of the things that are happening with the network, where we're going, kind of what we're doing, and just many just fun things that he's going to do. And he's got an episode up on the Podnuts website. It's DDG, Door-to-Door Geek. And you guys can listen to that first episode. It's about 12 minutes, and he's going to explain exactly what he's doing. But this is going to be another avenue that we're going to be able to, he's going to give his thoughts in different things of what he feels and information that he feels he wants to share with the network overall. So definitely check that out. And we'll, like I said, there'll be several different avenues, but what I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. And we want to do that $1 a month, and that would help out tremendously. So with that being said, I think we'll go ahead and let's answer some emails and take some calls. Phone lines are open. The call number is 1-888-697-0162. Go ahead, John. You raising your hand?
Does that mean I'm going to get a double in my salary?
Yes. You're going to go from, I don't know, what's double of zero?
100. Wait.
Double zero.
Actually, double zero. So are we playing craps now?
We don't. No, you're thinking roulette.
I'm thinking roulette. All right.
I'm still on the 12-sided dice, so I don't know what's going on anymore.
All right, let's move on into some emails. So this is from Richard Irvine, which we answered an email last week. He said, I wanted to mention that I'm also the only actual computer business in this town and, well, the three towns around us. It's funny Chris mentioned Glencoe. I am 15 minutes south of there. Glencoe is the only town around us that has an actual computer business. I also cannot offer same day as I have a full-time job and parts take longer to come out here. Yeah, sorry about that. Good tips. I will stick to it and make sure and make everyone come to the conclusion that I am it. I'm the only computer guy between London and Chatham. Chris will know. Yep. Other businesses like plumbers, electricians, etc., are all actually more than the other cities around here because, well, shop local. LOL. Thanks, guys. Richard Irving. Thank you for that follow-up, Richard. And yes, so we had talked about last week, I'd said, check out and see what your plumbers and electricians are charging in your area. And you should be around the same amount. Because I hear all the time, for some reason in IT, we feel we cannot charge what some of these other industries are charging. Because for some reason, there may be a lot of people say, well, if I'm paying a mechanic $160 an hour, whatever the book says, then I got to have my car. Well, do you? Yeah, most people could ride a bike. A lot of, you know, some people work close, you know, some people could actually riding a bike would be good for them. But the point is, at the same time, when somebody says, I can't do without my car, take somebody's computer away and see what happens. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Okay. People will freak out if they do not have their technology, their way to watch a cat video, get on Facebook and chat with their friends, bother people online, do all these things that they do. And every once in a while, the little bit of business that they actually do on their computers. Really, computers are a big, humongous entertainment device that most people just will not live without. The ones that are living without have not actually lived with the technology. They just kind of pushed it off to the side before they ever got started. The ones that have been sucked in, they got to have it. So to me, it's like TV or anything else. You pay a cable bill, most people, or you're paying some sort of internet connection, whatever it is, you're paying for ways to be entertained, and it's no different. So you should be able to charge what everybody else charges and do a superior job.
I think you and I spoke a little bit about this in the Podnuts Daily episode, Jeff, about how this industry, people are just very scared of charging what, quite frankly, they're worth. And I think we can probably do an entire episode about something like that and get a good back and forth going. But yeah, I agree. Look into what electricians and plumbers are charging in an area and charge something comparable, but make sure your skill set is up there and worth that charge. If you're not, I mean, you're not going to take Craigslist level skills and be able to get, you know, 5-star wages. So step up your game and you'll be able to be the premium guy in your community and you'll be able to bring in the money and people will know that you're the person to go to because you're the local expert. And whenever someone needs help, they're willing to pay an expert what an expert is worth.
Very well said.
I also think you need to find a starting point too. You need to figure out how much it's going to cost you to deliver those services. So if you find out the cost for you to deliver an hour of service is $70, you can't be charging $35. So you got to take into account the maintenance on your vehicle, insurance, tools you're going to need, the software you're going to need to buy, training you may need, all that kind of stuff. You know, because the brass tacks of it is we do this because we like to make money. I mean, along with all the other benefits that we have along the way. But, you know, making a little bit of money along the way makes this a little bit more enjoyable. I know a lot of guys, this is a hobby. This is kind of a hobby to me because I do enjoy this, but you know, what's this? You never see any sad people riding a jet ski. So, you know, you got to make a little bit of money so you can have a little bit of fun. And, you know, if you're just out there working and the harder that you work, the more hours you book, the more money you lose because you're not charging enough per hour to cover the costs of what it cost you to deliver that hour of service, then in the end, you're going to be miserable and burnt out.
And poor.
And yeah. Poor.
And poor.
Have no jet ski.
And I think the other thing, too, with that, and I agree with all these guys, is what I would say is charge what's comparable out there regardless of your skill set. And the reason I say that is because really to learn things on the fly, if you're if you're well attuned to this business, most of us have done that from the beginning. What you can do is that if you're having to learn something, you don't learn it on your customer's dime. So maybe you eat some time because, hey, I had to learn something to fix this particular problem. I'm not going to charge my customer for it. It's going to be the charge of my education in this particular case. But you're also not shortcutting yourself by going, hey, okay, this 1 hour job that I charged $70 an hour for actually took me 2 hours, but I can't charge them for the second hour. So I'm going to charge them the $70 and tell them it was an hour job because that's really what it should have taken. So that way you're not having to start off at these really low levels and then bring yourself up over time, because what you'll see is people, you'll get some pushback. I don't think you'll get as much as a lot of people think you'll get when you raise your prices. The people that are going to leave, they're going to leave anyways, regardless of what you're charging. The people that are going to stick with you, they'll stick with you because they like you, they trust you, and they know what you're all about.
Yeah, I made a rule
in your market. I think a lot of guys feel kind of weird about not working. And what I mean by that is if you can charge $150 for 1 hour of work, you know, that's 5 hours of labor at $30. So I would rather work for an hour for $150, you know, roll my 20-sided die for 4 hours and then go do another hour worth of work at $150.
There you go.
Keep in mind, as you do premium work, you may work less and make more money.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, boy.
Eric, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think the big problem with people charging what they're worth or what they should is they're afraid of what their competition is doing. And I decided early on, I'm not competing on price. I'm competing on quality.
Right.
And in my opinion, I bring the best quality in the area to my clients. And that's where I compete. Price, it doesn't matter.
Right. And here's the other thing. And I've said this from the beginning, is that certain people are going to gel with you. Those are going to be your good customers. The people... I've told people many a time, if you and I don't trust each other, then there is absolutely no reason I'm going to take your money and there's no reason that you should pay me. So let's just call it off right now. I only want the people that go, hey, Jeff knows what he's talking about. I trust Jeff. I'm going to use him in this particular case. He's going to steer me in the right direction. He's never going to take advantage of me. Those are relationships I want. The rest of that stuff, it just doesn't matter. All right. So, Richard, I hope that keep going on and you'll crack this nut. It's a little scary at first, but once, and we've all done it, once I raised my prices and worked less and made more money, I said, what in the world was I waiting on? And these guys will all attest to the same thing. All right. Email number two. Let's see. We've got, this is from Aaron Thornton. Okay. Getting my business started. Hello, everyone on the show. My name is Aaron, and I'm currently working on getting my computer repair business set up. I listen to the podcast religiously, enjoy all the content you guys provide, so thank you. Thank you for listening. I started listening to the podcast a few months ago, but in my free time, I've listened to episodes all the way back to the middle of last year. Whew, that's a lot of listening to me. Whew, just feel sorry for you. My question is, what tool or items should I add or remove from my list to have to get started in my business, as well as which tools work well with each other that will make life easier? And I think we've kind of answered some of those questions, but we're going to go through this list and we're going to talk about some of the things that maybe you need right now and maybe you don't. And we'll get a consensus from the panel. Here's my current list. iFixit Pro Tool Tech Toolkit, Repair Shopper, Tech Suite Tech USB, QuickBooks or FreshBooks, Fabs Auto Backup, TechSite Builder Webpage. From listening to the show and hearing everyone preach about not getting tools that you don't need just because you want them, we've all gone through that and still do sometimes. Once I have established that some customers, I will then set up an RMM and continue on down that path as well. For everyone that doesn't know, that's remote monitoring and management. I don't like three-letter terms. Also, which RMM does everyone there use and would suggest once I start that route? Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for putting together this great show. Best regards, Aaron Thornton. Says, still trying to figure out the business name, and I corresponded with him back and forth a little bit, and he finally said, hey, P.S., I finally settled on a name. Ha ha. NW Tech Solutions. Sounds good. So let's go over this list. So iFixit Pro Toolkit, Repair Shopper, Tech Suite, Tech USB, QuickBooks or FreshBooks, Fabs Auto Backup, and TechSite Builder web page.
Does FreshBooks have estimating yet?
Yes, they do. And time
they
tracking.
Do now.
Yep, and time tracking and bill tracking. But here's what I'm going to say. So online invoicing systems are amazing. Talk to your accountant before you decide on what you're going to use for your actual bookkeeping. Some accountants are okay with using FreshBooks. Mine is not. I do use a combination of FreshBooks and QuickBooks Desktop for that reason. A ticketing system, I really don't understand how Jeff could possibly live use the spreadsheets because that's insane.
Not for a ticketing system.
Not for ticketing? Oh, that's just your invoicing and accounting.
No, it's just for accounting, just purely
just
accounting.
For accounting. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's I stick with my original statement. You do need to have a proper ticketing system. And if those are going to be paper tickets until you get yourself situated in a point where you can get something electronic, then use a paper ticketing system. Use something, but make sure that you have everything ordered. Because if you don't order everything, if you don't make sure that you can quickly pull them up, whenever you need to, then you're going to wind up running into a huge mess.
Eric, go ahead.
I want to have to disagree with Chris and say, because Jeff and I spoke about this, using a spreadsheet for your accounting, especially when you're starting out, works perfectly well. Hell, I've been at it 5 years and I still use a spreadsheet for my accounting and I do just fine with it. Whether you want to go QuickBooks, FreshBooks, Xero, or just a spreadsheet, that's really going to be a matter of taste. And volume. If you're doing a bunch of volume at first, then yeah, maybe you want to think about some kind of accounting software. But if you're just starting out, start with a spreadsheet. Keep it simple. And don't waste capital when you don't have to waste capital. As far as the other things on your list, yeah, you definitely want a website. And I do like TechSite Builder. I use TechSite Builder's service. I used to code my site by hand and I'm too lazy to learn WordPress. So I switched to TechSite Builder and I love the service and I love the way my site looks. So that's definitely something you're going to want. TechSuite's pretty good. Although I would say just getting started out, you might want to learn how to use the tools manually before you start wanting to automate them. But TechSuite's a good tool. Heck, I use it and I like the guys at Repair Tech quite a bit. They're really cool fellas. And EMSGO, that's really going to be where you're going to get the huge difference in opinion. Pretty much, I think everybody sitting here at this little round table right now. I use two different solutions right now for my business clients. I'm using SolarWinds. For my residential clients, I'm using RepairTech's Kabuto. But mileage is definitely going to vary from person to person. Try a few out. Most of them have free trials. See what you like. See which interfaces you like, what features you like, and choose accordingly. Decide which one fits best with your business. And that'd be the advice I would give you.
Okay. John?
Well, I'm going to be devil's advocate in the middle and think that you should be using an accounting program right from the get-go. And what I mean by that, I agree with Chris that you should talk to whoever your CPA is, because in the end, I think they will save you a lot more time and money than, you know, if you do use QuickBooks Online Simple Start, that's like $10 a month. So with the idea that you're going to grow your business, you're going to become more and more busy as time goes on, you might as well master that product at the beginning. You know, and some of the most time-consuming things are invoicing, estimating, time tracking, and at the end of the day, getting your taxes done. But more importantly to me is, and maybe you can do this in your spreadsheet, and then if you can, I'm totally wrong, but there's something that I always say, is let the numbers lead you. So if you can pull the proper reporting and see, manage by eye, your numbers from your spreadsheets, on what is making you money, where you're making your money, where you're losing your money, and the trends in your business, spreadsheets are fantastic then if you have that built up and you can do that. If not, I think you really need a tool to speed invoicing, speed estimating, and be able to let those numbers lead you in the right way. My IMO, in my opinion.
Well, so to hit on that, you could. I mean, I sat down and created scripting in Excel for, you know, car companies that wanted to pull data out of their servers and make nice pie charts for them and all of that. But what I will say is that the amount of time that it would take me to set up Excel to pull all of those reports for me by running a macro, I may as well spend the $200 and buy QuickBooks Desktop and have it run the reports for me.
Now, I will say, and I don't know if Eric wants to share this or not, but he did share his spreadsheet with me, and he basically has all that built in to basically where you look at it at a glance and can look at what's actually where the revenue's coming in, what's going on. You can get a good overview of your business. Correct, Eric?
That's correct.
Perfect. And obviously, we all use different tools. Same thing. Somebody likes Snap-on. Somebody likes Craftsman. Some people use a Mac. Some people use Windows. Linux.
Or, God forbid, Linux.
You said it. Don't, I did. That's Jeff at Podnuts.com.
Yes. All right. So let me go down this list real quick. We have the iFixit Pro Tech Toolkit. You've already heard some of us talk about some of the different things you can get for a little bit cheaper to get you started, get you a $20 set of screwdrivers, or like some of these guys talked about, the knockoffs that you can get for $15 on eBay and so on and so forth. And then as you're doing business over time, make that an investment in your business if that's something you want. It's like I said, $60, $70, something like that, I think, for that kit. And it's nice because it's got all the different little things in there that will make your job easier over time. And it all depends on, are you pulling laptops apart? Are you pulling phones apart? What are you pulling apart? Maybe you just need a regular set of small screwdrivers and, regular big size screwdrivers to do most of your work. The other thing, Repair Shopper to me is a no-brainer as far as your ticketing system, invoicing, and all that. You can get a free account over there for up to, I believe it's 20 invoices a month, which for a lot of small businesses, that's going to be plenty for you to be able to do that. So you can use that. You're not going to get some of the marketing features and stuff like that, but it will get you in the habit, and I agree with what John had said, it will get you in the habit of actually documenting, because the number one thing we've done wrong, most of us from the beginning, is not have enough documentation. And the reason I'll say that is because I just had a situation where I had switched a password that had gotten compromised on a customer's AOL account. And when we needed to switch it again, I went and looked at my documentation, and that was the one thing that I didn't document that I had switched. So I had the old password. So I was not, we had to go in and do a reset. So it costs you a lot more time. The more you can document upfront, the happier you'll be and the quicker you'll be in the long run. Just remember that. It seems like it takes a long time, and sometimes there is a learning curve. But so to me, Repair Shopper, no brainer. Tech Suite, Tech USB. I think you could start off just like the rest of us have started and build your business up from scratch and basically use some of the tools that are out there that you can get a hold of to run on these machines to do virus removals and stuff like that. Now, there's other things you can take. Ken Dwight, the virus doc, he's got his virus remediation class, which you can save up enough money to take that learning education and learn the things that you can do. And he explains a lot of that stuff of what you need to do to become more efficient in virus removal. A lot of people can do virus removal. There's just not a lot of people are as efficient as they could be. So it's always, there's room for improvement. But definitely the product itself is a great product. I use it. So, and it does save a lot of time in a lot of situations. QuickBooks or FreshBooks, again, for me, a spreadsheet for the amount of business I do in a year works perfectly fine for me. So, you can start off either way. Like these guys have said, QuickBooks for 10, QuickBooks Online, $10 a month, maybe learning it up front so that you're not having to learn it in the future. When you do get busy, there's some benefit to that. But you've got to count all these costs of what it's going to cost you, and you've got to make sure that you've got income coming in. Fabs Auto Backup, to me, that is another one that is a no-brainer. You're just not going to do it as well manually or quickly as Fabs Auto Backup, and it's not that expensive. You can find coupon codes out there and get that for a fairly decent price, less than $100. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's well worth it. So that is an investment I absolutely would make. TechSite Builder webpage, again, same thing. I've been using TechSite Builder since it was TechSite Builder 1 way back in the day, just static HTML page. But here's the thing. I did not have the time to go in there and create a website and figure out all the things I needed to do. I had to have somebody walk me through step by step to figure it out. With this is one step even better. And it is a cost, but But to me, it is well worth it. It is one of those things that you can basically have your website up and running in less than an hour, literally, with your basic information and get it out there on the web. And the hosting and everything, it's all covered. All your up, you don't have to worry about updates or anything. That is all covered and backed up in the background. You just can go in there anytime, log in, switch things, add prices, do whatever you want to do, add pictures. Plus, it comes with so much stuff inside that it will blow your mind how you can make it look like your own webpage, whatever you want it to look like. So there's a bunch of stock photos. There's all kinds of things. And when you get up in business, and they also have a concierge service where they will put in some of that information for you, but you can grow with that tool, and it's a one-time cost where they will go in there and add some stuff for you, and it's well worth it. So definitely, to me, that is a no-brainer because I don't want to do anything with a website, and you don't need to look like you have a website from 1999. Now, with that being said, word of mouth, in my opinion, is still going to be king in a lot of situations. You do a good job for somebody, they're going to pass it on to somebody else. Get some business cards. Those you can go through, you know, Vistaprint, or we had a person that was on here before, and I can share that information with you. But you can get business cards fairly cheap. Get 500 of them, or get a couple hundred to start out, whatever you want to do. But have those to where you can pass out those business cards and have them on hand. And when you do work for a customer, give them two or three and let them pass those cards along for you and let that work for you as far as advertising and whatnot. So that's my thoughts on that list. Yes.
Up 2 cents. I'm thinking back to a past show and I don't remember the number. I can try to look it up, but I sent it to Irving as well. Remember Jerry Bransfield sent us that spreadsheet that he made?
Yes.
That took into account all the expenses. And then the cool thing about it was you could plug in what you were charging per hour. And I sent this to Irving too, and maybe we can put the link in the show note as well if we can find it. But that would be really handy because you could put all these tools in there and maybe find out that you need to charge $300 an hour and then maybe take out the ones you don't need one by one.
That is a great idea.
Non-critical hot items at this point. But, I would probably come at it as build your wish list, aim high, and then put what you think you're going to be able to charge an hour, and then have reality smack you in the face and pull out the things you don't need. Because just like the first comment we made, I buy a lot of stuff I don't need. One, because I like to play with it. Two, because I think it might give me an advantage. Because I really think there is something to be able to spend money to make money. But at the beginning, you got to be very careful to make sure you're meeting your cash flow and all that, especially if you're going off and you don't have a full-time gig. This isn't part-time because obviously you want to eat and pay your mortgage or whatever before you play. So,
right. Exactly. Well, very good. I think that answers a lot of those questions, and hopefully that gives you something to chew on. And yes, I believe I hosted that link or a copy of it on my Google account. So we'll be able to find that link and put that out there again, John. Good call on that. Good memory.
Appreciate it.
That's what I have these guys here for. They cover my back. All right. So I think we have, not only have we gone over time, and I try to cut these shows shorter, but when there's so much information to share, it's hard to shut it off. But we've gotten to that point where we're going to go ahead and slow it on down. So I'm going to tell you, let's go ahead and Chris, if you would like, can you give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you at?
My parting thought is really going to be something that was said a couple of times. Buy what you need, don't buy what you want. A lot of us wind up getting trapped into this hole of buying the nice new shiny toy. Just don't. Speaking of shiny toys, though, I have a very not shiny website right now. So if you do want to know some basic information about what I do with White Label IT Services, you can go to our website at rstechteam.com or you can give us a call, 866-568-2813.
Awesome. As usual, I loved our back and forth, Chris.
Thank you, Jeff.
And Eric, if you would like to give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you at.
Well, along the same lines about talking about tools, I would say my parting thought would be if it's not going to make you money, don't invest in it because it's not a proper investment, especially I mean, sure, I want to buy a bunch of toys too, but if I can't make money on it, it's just a loss. And then I'm not going to be in business. And I don't want to get to do this stuff anymore. Then I'm going to get to spend time hanging out on shows like this and then gabbing and just wasting everybody's time. So, but no, my big rule for the shop though is if it doesn't make me money, I don't buy it. So I would pass that wisdom along. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can find me at, my email address is Eric. That's E-R-I-C at nowhere.tech. That's N-O-W-A-R-E.T-E-C-H.
Awesome. Appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today. It's been great.
Oh, appreciate you having me.
All right. And Mr. John Dubinsky, do you want to give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you at?
Just keep in mind that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with just one step. And a whole lot of, you can look up the rest of the quote later because I'm not allowed to say those words on this show. And you can find me at mavengroup.net.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you coming out and sharing all your wonderful information. And also really, really appreciate what you're doing with the show notes. You're definitely improving the show, and we definitely appreciate that.
Just add another zero to my pay.
There you go. I'm adding another zero. That's not a problem. We can add as many zeros as you want, to be honest with you.
Oh, no. Eventually, we are going to run out of zeros, Jeff.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. Anyways, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.